I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And you are welcome along to a bizarro episode of the Huddle Breakdown, where we have Enda Cole's return, at least temporarily, but I'm still stuck with this hosting gig. I don't know what the heck's going on here. But welcome, Enda, and Alan Morrison from Celtic by Numbers. We're here today to review the interesting weekend that was the game at Motherwell and some fireworks across the city. And then we'll do a quick little look ahead to Lazio for tomorrow, Wednesday in the Champions League. But before we get into that, and I think you wanted to touch upon some breaking news as of today.
Yeah, so just to explain what's going on at the minute with the podcast. So I've decided to swap the host chair for the co-hosting chair. So I've got my spreadsheets out. I shagged them earlier on, and I'm just crunching up the numbers now to figure out what my opinion is going to be on this football matter. But Tom Rodgick retired from football altogether. I mean, after he left Celtic, he may as well have retired as well as going to West Brom. But for me, Alan, I know you are a fan of that type of player as well, if not more skeptical of its limitations and what it brings to an overall structure of a team. But I think for me, Tom Rodgick has been my favorite player of Celtic in the modern era, and when I say modern era, I mean probably post Martin O'Neill Celtic is what the modern era of Celtic is to me, because that's what I grew up with. And Tom Rodgick to me is the type of player that I would have 11 of them in the team if I thought that you'd get away with it, because he's the perfect football player. He's just so classy on the ball, elegant on the ball, has the guts to come up with big moments when Celtic needed him, as was proven in the Scottish Cup as well. And he just had, like, probably an underappreciated footballer for most of his time, not by Celtic fans, but by the overall football community. I would say Tom Rodgick is probably one of the most criminally underrated players over the last 10 years that has played in Scotland. Alan, I think you are a fan as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's just, you just, certain players you just love to watch, and you just love the moments they give you. And, you know, it's a little bit, I suppose, like how a lot of fans are currently enamored with Rio Hatate, because he gives these beautiful moments, these wonderful pieces of skill that we all, that's why we kind of love the game. I saw Tom Rogic end of last season. It was when Sheffield United won promotion, clinched promotion to the Premier League, and I was sat right in more or less the front row at Bramall Lane, and Rogic was warming up for West Brom. He was within, you know, almost touching distance, and it was sad to see, because the guy, he warmed up at the beginning, he warmed up at half time, and he never got on the pitch. And it's a really sad way for him to end his career. But tellingly, you know, in his Instagram, in his social media post today, he pretty much focused 100% on Celtic. That really was where he made the bulk of his career. And, you know, he made nearly 300 appearances. He won, you know, over 10 trophies at Celtic in that time, as well as over 50 caps for Australia. I was a bit surprised by that. But yeah, that's fantastic. Appeared in more than one World Cup, I'm pretty sure. So all in all, you know, for a player who did have injury problems, who, again, if you we remember back, was sort of the kind of player that when he did get injured and he did come back, it took him an awful long time to kind of get back up to full fitness and full speed. He was quite a big guy. His body seemed to take a long time to kind of get back to full functionality. But when we saw Rogic at his best, when he was, you know, on form, fully fit, yeah, he was just fantastic. Because he was that unlikely athlete. He was a big guy, maybe 6'2", reasonably kind of heavy frame, but with a beautiful touch. And I know you hate left footers, Ender, but I think left footers just look more elegant naturally than right footers do. And he had that about. And just, you know, in terms of, again, the sort of almost the Rio Hatate sort of syndrome of, you know, how many big moments did he give us? How many moments that you will always remember as a Celtic fan? I mean, just off the top of my head, a winning goal at Kilmarnock when the league campaign was stuttering, and to give Celtic a 1-0 win, two absolute screamers against Ibrox, and then of course the treble winning goal against Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup final. I mean, I still to this day cherish that moment. My eldest son and my daughter were literally doing a huddle, dancing around the front room when that went in for quite some time. It was just tears in our eyes. It was just a magic moment, and that's all down to the big Aussie. So sad that he's giving up at 30, but listen, you know, he's prioritising his life. It's great that he's in a position to do that, and wish him and his family all the best.
And just a final point on him as well, I would say that one of the things that stands out to me outside of like on the pitch stuff is that interview that he did post-match, I think it was last season or maybe the year before, where he was asked about Celtic being on top and whether or not they could hold out until the end of the season. And he was just so forthright about, well, I mean, we've been the top team over the last 10 years. It's up to them to prove that they can catch us. We've proven that we can do it. It's up to them to put us off the pitch. And I think that gave us a real insight into a quiet person like Aaron. Like, he's sort of like the Aaron Moy character, where he was quite reserved, wasn't really in the front of your mind most of the time. But then when you actually got to hear him speak for once, he really gave you some insight into the type of mentality that he has. And I think that he's the exact type of mentality and player that Celtic should be looking to bring into the club. I know there are different, more athletic and faster and stronger and better players than Tom Rogic, but I think ultimately, like, that's the type of character that you want at Celtic. So, I'm very sad to hear that he's retiring. I wish he retired at Celtic, to be honest, but... Here, what can you do?
I'll just throw in two quick comments. One is, again, to be the spreadsheet shagger, is one of the things that stood out with Rogic that does even differentiate him from a Hatate is that, you know, his average quality of creativity was very high. And that's, you know, and so his ability to pick out those passes, those through balls around the box to set up teammates. I mean, he had that extra level of vision and anticipation. So that I think from a skill set, that was always, you know, kind of the magic of Rogic. And just from a personal standpoint, probably, I mean, above and beyond the events that you guys mentioned that are certainly memorable, I'm going to always remember those first few months under Ange, when both him and Turnbull were asked to do something that they really shouldn't have been asked to do. And they both, and I think particularly Rogic, the consensus, including myself, would have been, there's no way he's going to be able to do that at a proficient level, let alone a high level. And I think he actually did. I thought he really, was able to deliver and produce and perform, not only stay healthy, which had been an issue, but to do it with a style. He, you know, had really cut down on his weight. You could see, I mean, he was running. So to play that kind of attacking midfield role as an eight under Ange, and to do all the pressing work and the defensive work, I just thought it was, really a tremendous way for him to conclude his Celtic time. So yeah, always be fondly remembered for that, as well as the other obvious events.
Yeah, 100%.
What's with this amateur hour? You're key punching? Put yourself on mute.
Oh,
you know,
sorry. I'm sorry.
If you're going to put me in charge of hosting, I'm not going to put up with that nonsense, Enda. Especially with you being in England. Let the viewers know.
He's either doing work emails, or he's in the market for the Rangers' next manager, and he's putting bets on. Maybe.
Well, I should actually probably let people know why you're hosting and I'm not. I'm currently in London, so I don't have my current equipment. I have to drop off this call in about 10 minutes. And I was actually doing a little bit of producing work. I was writing a message into our private group chat here to let you know. A little secret, but I'm not going to let the viewers know that. So I'll finish that message. I'll put myself on mute before I finish that message. But will we talk about Mickey Beale? Pura Michal is no longer with us.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Yeah, you got to get your shot in here. But let's do the review of the Motherwell game first, and then we'll get to the Alan Morrison victory tour, where he spikes the ball, as we say in America. Let's go over Motherwell. Alan, if you want to start with kind of your analytical assessment of the good, the bad, and the ugly, since I'm hosting, that's how I'm going to frame it. Obviously the glorious ending, but there was a lot of not so glorious on the way to get there.
Yeah, listen, end of the day, it's such a memorable game because of how it ended and what was actually a pretty prosaic performance up until the last sort of 10 minutes of playing time, turned into an absolutely incredible finish with two late goals, the nature of it, the timing of it, all of that, and then just the way I do wonder to what extent that Celtic winner accelerated the events over at Ibrox, meaning, if Motherwell, for example, got a draw, I do wonder if that really would have kept Mickey going for another week at least. But we'll get onto that. But so in some respects, it was a sort of an epochal game in that respect. And maybe it is one of these games that we will only remember the result and we'll only remember the manner of it. But obviously, I'm here to be slightly dull and look at the performance that sits underneath it. And I have to say it wasn't good in many respects. And actually, we've talked about the defence a lot. Oh, anyway, and rightly so, in terms of the depth and the adjustments being made and players not being fit and coming back from injury and down to seventh, eighth choices or whatever, centre back and Joe Hart and those issues, and but actually today or for this game, it was more the attack that I was concerned about, and especially from the wide areas. I think we're just not replaced Jota really, and neither are we replacing Abada in terms of wing play and productivity. I said before, when we had Maeda and Jota as the wingers, you had a really lovely balance of speed and directness and pressing intensity and counter pressing and work up rate off the ball and tracking back and all that on one side, and then you had just a complete box of tricks, somebody who's going to try, take risks, but the reward from those risks was high. There was quality there, quality shots, quality deliveries. Yes, there was an awful lot of things that sailed over the bar and went wide and all that sort of thing, but with Jota, you got end product as well mixed in with all that, and he kept a whole defence on their toes, and he was hungry for the ball, and he wanted the ball, and his technique was good. He could take the ball in any height, any speed, and he could then do something with it. And, then we had Abada who would come on and do something, and again, generally produce something, whose numbers remain outrageous, even compared to Jota. And now, we don't have Jota or Abada. We've still got Maeda, and we've got sort of a load of new guys. And in fact, remember, James Forrest, bless him, we love James, but last season, there was no argument that James was fifth choice winger, right? After Haksabanovic, after Jota, Maeda, Abada, so And suddenly now you're bringing them on at half time because, you know, your new guy is just nowhere near being up to speed in terms of the physicality, the intensity, decision making, etc. You know, we've been, and this has been something that's been building for a few weeks now. Our quality in the final third. I worked out that we're about half the productivity in terms. I say productivity, I really mean goal threat and creation threat as measured by expected assists and expected goals. We're about half the level we were at last season with the players that we've got. That's a huge drop off in capabilities and in threat that we're producing there. And then, of course, that has a knock-on effect. That knock-on effect is that you don't get Kyogo in the game. How many chances did he have? You know, he was really, you know, snapshots from outside the box is about as good as it's getting. He's not getting anything in that sweet spot across the edge of the six-yard box. Nothing. When was the last time you saw Kyogo with a shot from inside the six-yard box? I can't even remember the last time he did that. It was a few games ago anyway. So, and then you add into that the fact that, again, we come back to the midfield. So the most forward play, most forward, most player is Hitati. And again, you know, Hitati is whether it's through injury and is working his way back, whether it's form or whatever it is. But again, it just adds to that sort of wastefulness in the final third. So all in all, as a team, we're just not producing. And actually, it was the two fullbacks. It was Johnson and Taylor that provided most of the attacking threat in terms of creating things at the weekend. And actually, it was Taylor, McGregor and O'Reilly that dragged the team over the line, if you look at the contributions of those three, that far outweighed anyone else on the pitch. So, yes, it was great fun. It was amazing. We'll remember it all. But there's some, you know, it's really tricky at the moment in these positions. And I do wonder, you know, Yang to me looks, I'll be honest, a long, long, long way short of a Celtic first team player at the moment. I'm not writing him off. He may develop, he may settle. He's a young kid, he's in a very foreign country, etc. But chucking him into these games, it's not helping him, I don't think. Palmer, I think he's going to take a bit of time to get up to speed. I know he scored that goal. We can talk about whether it was a cross or a shot or what have you. He put in a couple of good crosses, but again, he looks like he needs time, and of course he does. So in terms of, you know, in lieu of not having Abada, how does Celtic move forward? I do think, you know, that Maida is even less, his numbers are even worse than last season's, and he's probably had the worst numbers of all the wide players and forwards in terms, again, of threat. I know we got all the other stuff. That's why he plays, because all the other stuff is incredible and it's the elite level. But I'm just talking about the attacking threat stuff. So what do you do? What do you do with all that? I mean, I do think there is a case for some kind of 4-4-2 diamond. Get an extra body in midfield. We've got, you know, we can increase the quality by swapping out a winger and bringing in a Turnbull or a Holm or a Bernardo, one of those, whatever. I think we've got decent depth in that position. And then having Maida and Kyogo, who are both can both pull wide, can both play through the middle. Kyogo can play as a 10 almost. Maida can be the one that goes in behind. There's lots of, you know, variation there with that. I do wonder if that maybe is a way forward in the short term until we get wingers up to speed. Because to me, there's an absolutely gaping chasm of a gap in our capabilities at the moment in the wide aerials.
Well, I think, Alan, to just add to that, I think the injuries do come into that, and I would hold fire on the we haven't replaced Jota until Marco Tilio is fit and ready and in the first team, because I do believe that he is, from everything that I've read and heard people speak about him, he is going to be similar to Jota, if not exactly the same. But I think he also, if he does turn out to be as good as what people are saying, he opens up the opportunity for Celtic to change their formation and get players into better positions. I think the problem with Hitati is that he's sort of what you would call a tweener at the minute. He's not quite a number eight, he's not quite a number six, and he's not quite a number 10. I would say he's probably weakest as number 10 creatively. I don't think that's where he does his best work. I don't think Hitati does his best work in tight spaces. I think he does his best work on the half turn, getting the ball and driving Celtic up the pitch a little bit. So getting him deeper into the midfield would be better. And Matt O'Reilly is the creative spark in the midfield for Celtic this season, goal scoring and assists. So I think when Celtic have a fully fit team, I don't think they'll be playing a 4-3-3. I think Kyogo's too isolated with that. We don't have the quality, like you said, on the wing to get Kyogo into the game as much. So I think there will be a change in formation when everyone's fully fit that will, like you said, get Maeda further forward in central positions and not on the ball as much, get Kyogo on the ball more, and hopefully get Tellio into the team as well, and get O'Reilly and Atate into their stronger positions in the midfield. So I look at this result as sort of like the Ross County game that Anthony Ralston scored the last minute goal against last year. I know it was later in the years, in December, that he scored that, but in a similar vein, it does the exact same thing. It piles on the pressure on the other side of the city. The manager's now gone. That could end up being bad for Celtic, granted, but I think the momentum switch that Celtic can get from that is that they didn't have a full strength team. They started a couple of players that may not be starting this week in the Champions League. And instead of coming out with a stodgy result, they've pulled a last minute winner out of the bag before going into the Champions League. So I do share your frustration around the overall performance. I'm not downplaying it, but I also think that the result and the manner of the result in terms of what it does for the actual dressing room and the feeling in it could be bigger than going out and, you know, hammering Motherwell 6-0.
Yeah, I think what's your timeline here, Enda, so I can manage around?
Got like 5 minutes. Five minutes of my time, yeah.
So, well, thank you for that. We're honored. But I think, yeah, if I look at the good news that comes out of the game, one of them was that I thought Scott Bain was fine. And I think I had a sleeping suspicion of this. I didn't voice it, but I don't think there's a material difference in performance between him and Hart, most likely, at this stage of Hart's career, meaning that I don't think it's anywhere near the gulf that probably most people in the support would be concerned about. I'm not saying he's a better keeper. I'm just saying that it's probably like a, as I would say to my wife, más o menos, right? She's a native Spanish speaker, and that's the extent of my language skills. So, you know, kind of plus or minus, you know, not a huge difference one way or the other. And I thought he was fine. He made, you know, his good save. I think probably against type and expectation, given he's the more kind of athletic younger keepers, the evidence is that he's actually worse off the line, if you can believe that, coming for balls on crosses. So that didn't get tested that much, but other than that, yeah, shot stopping and you know, just general keeper play is within range of where Hart is at this point in his career. At least that's my view. So that's the good news, is that he had a pretty good game. The other thing I'll provide some other context for what Alan's been saying, because I'm a little more concerned on the attacking side. And I had actually written a column about it about a month ago. Is that and we're now several games further along, if you look at the first seven league games this season and you kind of benchmark it in recent history, when you look at non-penalty XG differential, you look at the amount that we're creating, and I think that's, to Alan's point, that's the real concern here. We expect the defense to get better as we get healthier, but we kind of have what we have outside of Tellio in attack, at least until January, and the drop off there has been dramatic. And so if you benchmark these, what we've done in the first seven games this season on those metrics that I mentioned are analogous to the worst of the beginning of the 18-19 season, when we had a bunch of players downing tools and, you know, the kind of the worst of the summer of angst around Dembele leaving and, you know, kind of the China Rodgers nonsense that went on. That period, and then the worst of 2020, 2021, you know, kind of we lost to St. Mirren and Lennon gets sacked. That's where we're at. I mean, those are really the two periods when you look at the underlying metrics. And probably another way to frame this is that during the first seven games, which, by the way, we haven't played Hearts or Hibs yet as well, the average XG per shot, we have a negative differential right now. So we're you know, rounding like 0.1. We're normally at 0.12 or better. And the opposition has about 0.11. So I fully expect our ability to suppress opposition chances to improve materially. But even if it improves materially, we're still in a range that over, you know, the remainder of the season, 31 games, that there's likely to be a material amount of points dropped just with normal randomness, normal, you know, kind of variance. Now that's where the 7-point lead already helps, meaning that those are in the bank. So that's the good part. But yeah, I think some of the issues that Alan broached that were evident once again against Motherwell, because again, Motherwell did not bunker. You know, that's been the nice part about going to Motherwell is under multiple managers, for the most part, they don't bunker. And actually, they tried to play out from the back. And for the first hour of the game, we created almost nothing unless they screwed up playing out from the back. So, you know, even that contextually within that game, that's why what I found most alarming about the game is that we really didn't create much until late, which we tend to do because of the subs and, you know, all the things that Alan's eloquently addressed over the years. So that's, I'm a bit more concerned, but, so we'll see as that progresses. Before Enda leaves, we'll stick a pin in that Motherwell game, and we'll move on to the comedic aspect of the weekend, which was the fun on the other side of the city. So Alan, let's defer to you if you have a brief comment, so we can get Alan in. But you're really the number one member of the Michael Beale fan club. So what are your you know, kind of short thoughts on, or quick yeah, thoughts yeah. On this development?
I think I said more or less on the day or that he was appointed that, you know, my first impression was he's an arrogant, supercilious prick. And I've never had any reason to dispel that view. I mean, the way that he left Queen's Park Rangers was an absolute disgrace, I thought. And if that was the nature of the man, then, you know, that I just don't think you do business with people like that, and so it proved. So you know, listen, I'm absolutely devastated that he's gone. I really am. You know, it adds a bit of chaos and what have you. But yeah, I would much rather he'd stayed. But yeah, I mean, listen, it was ridiculous that they were in a situation where any drop point, any loss, or even a draw. I mean, even a narrow win was getting the locals revolting more than normal. So yeah, it was a hopeless situation in that regard. So I guess it couldn't go on much longer. But yeah, listen, I'll let Enda have his say.
Enda? Well, I know that any fans from the other side of Glasgow will really appreciate me using a couple of fuckle as Gaelge, because I know they really like that. But there's an old saying in Irish, which is "It's minic a vreshin bell a fur a shrone," which in English translates to "It's often a man's mouth that breaks his nose," and I think that pretty much sums up Mickey Beale and his tenure at Rangers, because he came in, he spoke and spoke and spoke and spoke and wouldn't stop speaking. And I mean, like, just running his mouth about absolute nonsense. And I think I'm fine with a manager like Jose Mourinho, who is mouthy and funny and charismatic, but Michael Beale was none of those things, and he wasn't successful as a manager. And I've no doubt that he's actually a decent coach. He wouldn't have made it to this point in his career if he wasn't. And he's worked under some serious managers as well, who wouldn't have had him around if he wasn't a good coach. But a good coach doesn't make a good manager. And I think that has been proven with Michael Beale here. Just to sum it all up, I think Michael Beale's character can be summed up with his appearance in Ibrox in the boardroom when Gio van Bronckhorst was under the most severe pressure, and he turned up to a Rangers game. And most people in the profession will tell you that, like, in managers, that is not something that you do to another manager. If he's under pressure for his job, you do not turn up and watch. If you are one of the favorites to take that job, you should not be in the stadium before he leaves the club. So Michael Beale did that. He joined the club and he had the exact same impact as Gio van Bronckhorst, a worse impact as Gio van Bronckhorst even, because at least Gio got them to the Europa League final. So I'm actually sad that Michael Beale's gone, mainly because he was so, so easy to hit. And I like that in a Rangers manager. I don't like having indifference towards Rangers managers. I like being able to hit him, and Michael Beale was so easy to do that.
Sorry, Enda, wait till you meet Neil Warnock.
I mean, I kind of love Neil Warnock in many ways, so I will struggle with him. Like I like that type of manager who's just like, there's no bones about him. You know what he is. So if it was Neil Warnock, I'm praying for Frank Lampard, because that is just the easiest the easiest one over the next couple of months. It's just going to be delightful if he joins Rangers, but I don't think they can afford Frank's wages, to be honest.
Well, I think with that, we're going to sign you off, Enda, if we're going to transition here and let you go to whatever important things in your life that you have to be doing that's more important than this, which is a real, you know, come on. But
well, I just want to give the listeners a break from this audio that I have this week. So apologies, it's not tip-top shape. So I shall chat to you, the two of you next week, and to everyone else then too. So enjoy the game tomorrow, guys. I'll chat to you later.
Thanks. Take care, Enda. Take Safe care. Travels. So we're back to just the two of us. How romantic. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, there we go.
There we go. Well done.
The secret producer. He's dropped off and he's doing it from remote locations, co-opting my job. But yeah, so I was not only because of the obvious you know, as people that have to talk about this stuff, or don't have to, we enjoy talking about this stuff at least once a week. Having Beale as the manager has been a delight. So above and beyond that, to me, as with every managerial change, it introduces risk, you know, so good and bad from a, you know, what we care about from a Celtic perspective. And I think he was so oddly incoherent in his, particularly this season. And I've, you know, gone back and forth with some Rangers supporters that I converse with on Twitter about this. And I think the consensus was that he recruited to play kind of a narrow 4-4-2 diamond, or maybe a 3-4-1-2, some version of that, but staying, you know, with some of the same principles that they had under Girard, which is, you know, kind of the Christmas tree, narrow defending and, you know, some of those concepts. And then for whatever reason, he just completely drove the car into the ditch in this incoherent, you know, and I joked with one of them today. I mean, to me, that was epitomized by starting a game with Kamar Roof against Celtic as a right winger. And then when he made tactical shifts at halftime, put him in the number 10 position instead of, you know, subbing people or putting an actual winger on, or, you know, doing something coherent. So yeah, it was, to me, it's unfortunate because.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It opens up the possibility of someone not being that ridiculously incoherent. And I think where you and I probably have some honest disagreement on is I think that their recruitment has at least been of a standard that if they get a coherent manager, that, you know, they're still close enough that just with normal variance in a two-team race, you know, that we wouldn't necessarily run away with things if they get coherent. Again, I don't know enough about Warnock. I haven't tracked him historically that close. I don't know any of the other rumored people other than the ones that are very unlikely to come.
I was going to say to you, you got to remember, like I said to you on Twitter, there's two markets here. There's the deluded people putting money on these ridiculous managers that are never going to go there. And then there's the real market, which is, you know, and listen, you know, we're laughing and joking, but this come end of the day, it comes down to money. It's simple as that. It comes down to money. Yeah. You know, who can they afford to get in? How much resources can they afford to give that person on top of that in terms of recruitment? That's what it's going to come down to. Well, but, you know, to your point, your point about, you know, the way of playing. I mean, we had this with Dyla, right? If you remember, Ronnie Dyla played near Bitton and Scott Brown as a double pivot in the SPFL, and you sort of think, well, there is literally no reason to do this. It's like belts and braces. You just don't need. But what Mickey ended up doing is actually playing three defensive midfielders in front of the back four. And actually, funnily enough, their defensive stats are easily the best in the league. But you're going to be. If you're a dominant team over the rest of the league and you're playing three defensive midfielders in front of your back four, you're not going to give away a lot of chances. But the problem is being at the end of the pitch. And, you know, this is where I disagree with you slightly. I think the recruitment has been horrendous. I mean, if you remember the overlap program that Enda and I were on before last season's Scottish Cup semi-final. And I put to Ali McCoist in that show, I said to him, you know, Celtic have got an inbuilt, David Lowe says it's a 15 million a year advantage, year after year after year after year, right? That's on top of the structural advantages, the better trading model success that Celtic have got, etc. So it's a fantastic, in Scottish terms, it's a huge advantage. So how do you overcome that? And McCoy didn't disagree with me. And he's just said, Rangers have to get the recruitment spot on. That's what he said. They have to get the recruitment spot on. And Mickey, bless him, because, you know, for cost-cutting reasons, the club had sacked a whole load of people. It was left to Mickey to do the recruitment, the scouting and all that. And they've ended up with, you know, and listen, this isn't me. This is, as I said to you before we started, I've consumed an awful lot of Schadenfreude this week because why the hell not? It's great fun. But again, these are not my words. These are from the various delightful blue podcasts that there are out there. Oh, such quality. You know, Deschers is a disaster. What they're saying is one of the worst signings they've ever made in their history. In fact, of all the signings that they've made, the only one that gets past marks is Butland. And the rest of them, they've pretty much written off. So that's not a Celtic fan saying that. That's their own supporters saying that they're, you know. To your point about would a new manager inherently be more coherent? Could he possibly be worse than Mickey? Well, he's got to work with the players he's got. And, you know, yes, they've suddenly hit a lot of injuries into probably some of the better players, to be fair. And so that may well improve, no doubt. And I completely take on board. I'm still sitting here. Once all the laughter's, you know, we're all laughed out, I'm still sitting here like you, actually, thinking if they do get someone in who's coherent and we don't improve in any massively, which I think is probably not going to happen. I think we will improve. But I just don't see us creating enough chances at the moment to you know, be sure that we could defeat a coherent team. So I think there's still, you know, all shits and giggles aside, I think there's still some genuine concern there if they get somebody coherent in.
Yeah, and my you're right. So I apply my dopey attribution framework, and when I've done that with them this season so far, I think that the by far the most material detriment has been Beal. Meaning that, you know, I typically watch most of their games and analyze their games because, again, what else are we going to analyze domestically? There's not too much other than kind of peekaboo looks at some of the other teams. But as far as an actual threat for the league, it's one team. So I pay some attention to them, and I could not, other than the Bettis game, I have not seen them come out with what I would consider a coherent setup and selection in lineup with that selection. And, you know, he came out with, you know, an attacking front three, played with a striker and two wingers, and actually played two guys that have played wing. And they gave Bettis a good game. And I don't think he's been putting his players in positions that are at all coherent relative to their strengths and weaknesses. To your point, they're not, you know, it's the same struggles that we have, which is at the price level that we're shopping, you're not going to get an off-the-shelf 26-year-old or 25-year-old, even out of a big five league, which is where they kind of pulled these guys out of, particularly the higher priced ones. You know, we see that with our people that we pick up. They're maybe a step slow, or they're maybe a little sloppy on the ball, or their decision-making might be off a little bit. You're not going to get that polished finished product shopping in that price range with that career track. And I think he's been, you know, really misusing these players and putting them in the worst positions possible that actually highlight their weaknesses as opposed to what strengths they do have. So that's where I'm not expecting it to happen. I just think that there's risk there that if you get someone that comes in and uses some of these guys more coherently, you know, we've discussed Sima over time, and I think Sima's got a lot of positive attributes that could be used in a coherent way with, you know, some deficiencies, significant deficiencies as well. But, you know, it's that kind of thing that I worry about someone coming in. Even, you know, again, I know this will get some probably some chuckles, but even someone like Derek McInnes, you know what you're getting. He's going to be coherent in the way that he does things. I don't think he would be so ridiculous as to play Kemar Roof as a right wing or as a number 10. You know what I mean? Like, it, and with the improved athletes that he would have at Rangers with his man marking and that kind of thing. Like, I could see a material improvement in their ability to play just off of the manager not being a moron.
Agreed. But I mean, the reason that, you know, Rodgers and Postecoglou were successful was that whatever club they'd been in, they looked to play possession dominant attacking football. And if you're Celtic, that you have to play that way at home. Similarly, that's how they need to play. But they're looking at, you know, if the rumors are to be believed, the people that are looking at, you know, it was Nathan Jones, Neil Warnock, and I'm talking about the realistic ones here. I'm not talking about Gallardo and Clement and you know, the guy Janssen from AZ Alkmaar. I mean, for Christ's sake, please have some self-awareness about the realities of the world, right? You're really looking at that market, or the McInnes type market. These are all managers whose skill set is kicking, fighting, punching, screaming to try and get into a playoff place, or to get away from the relegation zone, to not get a team relegated. And to your point, I agree. Any sort of sensible coach would play Roof as your centre forward, and probably, you know, use Sima better, etc. But ultimately, these are not the managers that are in the frame that are realistic in terms of money. Remember, bring back to money again. are not the type of manager that is got really much experience setting up possession dominant, attacking, free flowing teams. In fact, quite the opposite in many respects. But again, they seem to be, certainly as a fan base, they seem to be locked into this classic, which is, you know, to be fair, all clubs fans do, of what was the previous guy that we've just sacked crap at? Let's get somebody who's not that, right? So, you know, Mickey wasn't a staunch brogue wearing, you know, all that sort of cultural baggage. So we need one of them, or at least one of them in the management team, etc. You know, he wasn't very experienced, so we need someone who's experienced and has won things, etc., etc., etc. So all that nonsense. But of course, as we know, you just need the right person who's got the right skill set, given where you are as a club and the resources that you have available to you. But I mean, you know, that's why actually somebody like a Jesse March would probably be more of a sensible shout than
I can't imagine Marsh walking.
No, I can't imagine either. The one name
that worries me even abstractly, which given all of that we know and what you rightly and smartly point out relative to potential issues with the finance part of it, is what do you think? How would you feel about a Muscat appointment? From a competitive, assuming that he's, you know, plausible from a financial perspective.
Yeah, I think it looks kind of mixed. I mean, he's no Ange, right? Let's be honest. But he's done a good job of taking Ange teams and sort of carrying the ball. You know, so fair play in the environments that he's worked in, which is, you know, again. And therefore, he's had success. Does he deserve a shot at a European league? Of course, he does. Of course he does. You know, it's in the same way that people sneered at Ange. I wouldn't sneer at Kevin Muscat in that regard. I don't know. Obviously, the first thing that Ange did was, you know, he got in players that we got a rare 18 months of synergy between, you know, manager and backroom team to bring in players that would fit the system that Ange wanted to play. They've just gone through that exercise. How many of those players could play effectively Ange ball or Muscat ball, if you like? really? I mean, we saw that. Well, no, listen, we saw that in the game at Ibrox. You know, they don't have forwards that can press the ball particularly well. You know, the midfield are, apart from, you know, Cantwell's probably main skill actually is off the ball, pressing. But, you know, Raskin, Lundstrom, Jack? No, I don't think so. So your midfield and your forwards are going to struggle to do the off-ball elements. Similarly, your fullbacks are getting older. So again, I'm just quoting their own fans. You know, Tavernier and Barisic, their legs are slowing down. You know, they don't have a lot of pace at the back. So again, if you're going to push up and play a high line and squeeze the opposition, you know, Goldson's got a good long pass in him. But you know, you need people to move the ball quickly. Again, is that really sort of Jack Lindstrom's main sort of skill set? So, I think Raskin could play that way probably. He's very tidy, neat on the ball. But you're back to yes, Muscat. He probably deserves a chance at a higher league, etc., bigger club. But will he get the players to play the way he wants to play? I don't think they're in the building. And how are they going to turn that squad over? With no money, with, you know, no money to buy new players, so that's going to be a tough ask, right?
Absolutely, and that's I raise him more so again, abstractly thinking about this on a scatter plot of risk and reward. not that it's likely to work out, but you know, if the issue is because he would check the box as far as at least his style of play would be more attacking. So it would be less of that kind of, you know, staunch defending and, you know, that kind of the physicality aspect of it. Not that he wouldn't have that as well. I mean, I suspect going into that environment, he might play that part of it up quite a bit as well. I don't think that's where we've really been outside of, you know, a 2+ year vignette interlude between Rodgers and Rodgers. We've been spoiled in having, you know, really high-end managers. So it's not something that just comes kind of naturally and easily. He's probably the one that seems relatively reasonable or plausible that I think would at least introduce more risk into the equation. Not to say that it's going to work out, but I'd be more concerned that, you know, I could see a pathway there if it were to happen. Let's look ahead. Are we done having fun? Or is that, let's go back to the, let's go back to the, you have to get back to listening to Rangers podcast. So we got to wrap this up here.
No, I think I'm done.
Well,
I'm starting to feel really grubby and unhealthy.
So we're looking ahead tomorrow, to Lazio. And I sent out a thread when this group was announced that, this would be a measuring stick for us, and that this should be a group that, you know, if all things were firing, that we should welcome as far as a Champions League group. And currently Lazio, I think, are 15th in their in Serie A.
Might even be 16th, yeah.
16th maybe. And that's not a fluke. I mean, if you look at kind of their XG differential, and you know, sometimes this early in the season, you get some fluky stuff where performance doesn't align with results, but they've pretty well earned that level in the table. So what are your expectations? I mean, to me, we're at home. This is, I would argue, not even the Lazio that we defeated twice several years back. That seems to be an iteration that's a notch below that. So what are your thoughts on the competitive matchup going into tomorrow?
Yeah, listen, I mean, Celtic have got a chance, right? I mean, we're not going to pretend that this is a team in great form. Like you said, quite the opposite. I mean, if you look at shots on target, big chances created, all that XG, like you say, those things are running at about a half to a third the level of the teams at the top of the league. So they're not in the position that they're in, as you say, by fluke. You know, they're just not having a great season so far. I don't know if they've had a sort of, you know, whether their schedule's been tougher or what have you, but they're in 16th place after 7 games. They've only got 7 points. They've only scored 7 goals. So, and as I say, looking at the underlying data, I won't pretend that I've sat and watched them. It looks like they deserve to be there. They're in the right place in the league. So that you know, if you said to us at the beginning of this campaign, you're going to play the 16th team in Serie A, you'd think, okay, you know, we'll take that. We've got a
please,
chance
please,
here,
please.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, listen, what are we going to get? They're a Sarri team, which means they're going to be pretty patient. They're going to be looking to dominate the ball, right? But again, looking at, you know, where are they strong? Which parts of this pitch are they strong in? Which parts of the pitch do they not control? You know, they don't, this is going to be interesting. And this comes back to the conversation that we had earlier about Celtic's wing play, because, you know, Lazio don't control the wide areas. They don't seem to have, or maybe they don't seek to. I think they try and seek to control the middle of the pitch. So whether actually this is a chance where the Celtic's wingers are going to have time and space, or again, I go back to, could you play, as has worked well at Livingston, Maeda and Kyogo, almost as split strikers looking to, you know, really exploit the wide areas whilst maybe having 4 in the middle to match them up, where I think they'll pack the middle areas. They're not particularly strong going down the left by the looks of it, and they're right defense. So again, some would think that for Maeda to potentially exploit. So you know, as a team, they don't even though they dominate possession, they're even struggling to control key areas of the pitch this season. And I'm using Opta to do a really nice thing where they plot which teams have got control over which sort of segments of the pitch, and I'll share that on Twitter or on a blog maybe if I get the chance. So all of the sort of fairly quick analysis, that if you want to call it that I've done so far, suggests that, you know, we should have a good chance here. But I just worry that we're still a little bit half baked. I think we're in a good place in many respects, in terms of, I think we're seeing a fairly contented Steely Rodgers really settling into his task. There seems to be a good sort of unity about the place. There's a good sort of camaraderie, determination amongst the players. All of those non-performance things, if you want to call them that, all look to be positive. I think the hopefully the injury list is starting to clear a little bit. Carter Vickers is at least back on the paddock in training. Phillips, you know, he's probably a little bit half baked, but he's at least got, you know, 45 minutes, nearly 40 minutes probably in the end on the weekend there, and he's going to have to really step up, to be fair. So, you know, but again, I come back to, can we create enough chances and can we take those chances? Because Keogh's been brilliant in Scotland. He's not been quite as clinical in European matches. And really, at the moment, if O'Reilly doesn't break past the striker with a well-timed run into the box, or Kyogo doesn't do a bit of magic in the box, you don't see where Celtic are going to score at the moment. That's a real concern. So that's why I say I'd be almost tempted to do a 4-2-4 diamond, to maybe have Turnbull in there. You know, Turnbull does make things happen in the final third. Have Maeda and Kyogo wandering, splitting, Kyogo coming short sometimes. Let Taylor and Johnson provide that width. Taylor was excellent actually against Motherwell in the main, and he's not the quickest, but he does have energy, he does get up and down, and he was actually making quite a lot of progressive runs, more than normal against Motherwell. And Johnson, we know that he has got that sort of engine as well. So I still think that could work for this game. I think we should go in there hopeful, which is awful. I'm now going to be so disappointed, but you know, I think we've got a decent chance of getting something out of it.
Yeah, again, to me, this we very much should win this game, and that's from a conceptual framework, right? Meaning that if you just look at the profile of us as a club and where Lazio is right now, and I would argue the way they play. So I'll throw out a stat here. As an example. So to your point, you know, they are, you know, a little more possession, but they're very kind of methodical possession with Sarri ball. And defensively, they're not intense. So they're not a high pressure, high intensity side, which again, given our issues right now, particularly in the back line, I think that would be favorable. So if you just quantify that, Wyscout has something called challenge intensity, which is basically the number of duels, tackles, and interceptions per minute of opposition possession, right? So it kind of normalizes the how much you're actually defending and how active you are in defending in that window of time. And they are third to last in Serie A. The only two teams, Cagliari and Sassuolo, are less intense by that metric this season, and they were second to last year. So this is not a team that's going to come out most likely and just, you know, anywhere near even with Feyenoord, what they were as far as their intensity in challenging us proactively. So, so, if, you know, it's relative to building out from the back and getting some possession and being able to create something. But this is where we go back to the conversation from the rest of the show, which is, even with that, do we have the wing play and the midfield composition at this point to be able to create those chances for Kyogo in particular? And this goes back to one of the areas of concern so far, and you mentioned it. I'm just going to throw some numbers on it. So Kyogo's been getting about the same amount of shots as the average last season, for example, but his XG is about 60%. So he's down a huge amount, not only in average quality, but you know, just generally what the attacking output has been. Nice, picked it up on some of the creative stuff, him dropping and being involved in built up. But at this stage, we need him to be scoring against these kind of teams. So that's going to be a big concern. Let's hope. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what the selection is and at the center back position. That's probably the biggest question mark going into the game. And then how he ends up going with the wing position. I suspect Palma with Maeda would be my guess, but unless he goes with the, you know, 4-4-2, like you were mentioning, which I'd be open to as well. But again, I think it'll be interesting to see whether they make that kind of structural change, because for the most part, he hasn't so far. He's been tweaking things but we haven't seen any of that Rodgers-esque, you know, kind of wholesale shifts in a position outside of being down a man, which he's very adept at. So, and any last thoughts as we head into, as we wrap up on our hour here?
So who would you pick? Would you keep Bain and go?
Probably not. I mean, I think making that kind of a switch at this point would probably introduce more potential disruptive energy, shall we say, than the potential uptick in performance. I probably not. I could see the argument, but I'd probably stick with Hart. I'm not saying it's going to work out well, but you know, as far as kind of the risk reward, I'd probably stick with Hart.
Yeah. I just think that the chances of Hart being found out because of the regressive risks that we talked about, and it happened against Feyenoord, right?
Yep.
So the chances of it happening again to me are high. And whereas Bain's more likely just to do something stupid, I just think his overall athleticism and speed.
Yep.
And he looked confident to me on Saturday. He looked comfortable in himself. He played with confidence. He came out. He actually did take a few high balls well. He made a few good saves. People forget it was under Rodgers that, you know, Bain took Gordon's place. And Bain, I still remember the piece I did on it, because I was thinking, you know, is this Rodgers being Mardy at perceived lack of Gordon being good with his feet? And no, actually it wasn't. It was genuinely the right decision. It was across all the metrics, it was the right decision to make. I know that was a few years ago, but you know, Rodgers is the sort of manager that can make a player feel yep. 10 foot tall, etc., and confident. So I don't know. I'm not trying to be provocative, but my honest opinion is that I would actually keep Bain in. I would this game.
I think that's 100% reasonable. I mean, that, to me, it's a coin flip type of thing. So I think that the risk part of it is, independent of Bain's performance, we could lose this game 4-0 at home, right? I mean, we just have enough lingering issues that kind of result would not shock me. I mean, it's not my base case, but, you know, a couple of bad errors by Scales and or Lagerbilka, or, you know, Hatate giving the ball away centrally and built, you know what I mean? Like, there's plenty of, or Bain or Hart, like, just throw a couple of bad mistakes in there and it could be a bad scoreline. And my issue is, you know, if that happens and he picks Bain, Bain's going to get slaughtered and Rodgers is going to get slaughtered. So to me, it's like, what's the risk reward upside if I'm Rodgers, given, you know, what the competitive dynamics of this game are. And I'd probably be a chicken and pick Hart. but I agree with, like, analytically, I agree with you that Bain probably does give us a better chance to win the game or get a result on the margin. I mean, I think it's probably on the margin, because Hart does introduce that, you know, bigger chance of a risk.
I mean, the reason that I don't think he will play is just your point. So if you remember, Lagerbielke is actually suspended. So
that's right.
Phillips will have to play. So given you've got another centre-back pairing, that probably suggests you don't introduce another change at goalkeeper, I suspect. I suspect that might be a factor in Hart, at least providing that continuity of having somebody in your regular back five.
Right.
At least three players out of five being regulars, as it were. So, yeah, Phillips is going to play, I suspect, because that's why he came on.
Who else is left?
It's Iwata, and that's it. That is it. I mean, that's the other option in the 4-4-2, is that you bring Iwata in and you push McGregor on one and maybe Tati onto 10. Neither of those are good options to me. I don't mind Iwata coming in, but I think pushing McGregor to 8 and Tati to 10, neither of those are good things. Another thought. But yeah, listen, I don't know. I think Rodgers is still kind of growing into this. And like you say, we've not really seen anything too radical from him in terms of, and he's really come to life when we've been like a player short. I think we saw a really I thought, a very effective performance in the first half against Feyenoord. I think he really showed what a well-coached team Celtic could be, even being diminished. And I think we'll see the same tomorrow night, I'm hopeful. What I'm fearful of, actually most fearful of, really, is that we actually are a little bit too safe and we just don't create enough chances and we leave points on the park again. That's right. In my mind, I think, you know, we shouldn't underestimate this team, but similarly, you know, their league table is a pretty accurate reflection of where they are at the moment. So it's just striking that right balance between attack and being solid and protecting, especially Scales and Phillips, because he hasn't played much at the back.
Well, and even during Rodgers' first tenure, our issues in Europe, generally speaking, despite the legend of the lopsided results at Barcelona and PSG, it was actually chance creation against, you know, the Red Bull contingent that we played, Valencia, Zenit. I mean, we struggled to get, you know, even approaching one in XG in a lot of those games. So yeah, I agree with you. It's, you know, whether or not we can get, because I don't think we're going to get a high volume of chances. I think it's more so we might get a couple of really high quality ones on, you know, those channel balls down through with Maeda and or Kyogo, that kind of thing. And then hopefully they finish them. I mean, that's, we get one or two of those and then hopefully we can, you know, button it up and batten down the hatches and get the result. So, well, we've gone over our hour here. Hope everyone enjoyed the Alan Morrison show with dunking on Michael Beale. We've been looking forward to it for months. It came way too early. We were hoping to get another full season out of it, but we appreciate everyone listening and watching. If you can hit the subscribe button and like, if you're watching on YouTube, or if you can leave a review on iTunes or Spotify, we'd appreciate it. Enjoy the game tomorrow. And I don't know if we'll be back later this week. Maybe just Alan and I might hop on later in the week to review the Lazio game. If not, we'll be back next week. Take care.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.